Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is the Spasmatic, and I am hipper than Malcolm in the Middle, and I'm working you so hard I might as well be playing a fiddle. And I am here to give you my wrestling thoughts. This is episode one, and you are in for a wild ride. An hour and 30 minutes of pure wrestling podcasting. It's going to be fun, engaging, and insane. And the topic we are going to do today might as well be one of the best to one of the best topics in podcasting history, as nobody usually reviews these type these shows from Ring of Honor's past. But today we are going to review possibly the best ROH show ever and its first ever pay-per-view on In Demand. Yes, we are definitely reviewing Respect Is Earned 2007 from the Manhattan Center in New York City. And with that said, it should be an excellent hour and 30 minutes of audio. The show started off with before we get to the BJ Whitmer promo, the stats of this show were really kind of astounding if you look at it, knowing the live gates that Ring of Honor gets these days. Respect Is Earned had a Respect Is Earned at the Manhattan Center in New York only had about 1,250 people in attendance, which is a very which blows my mind. Considering that only just last year, SuperCard of Honor got 3,000 people seated for the Jeff for the for the for the Jeff and Matt Hardy Young Bucks ladder match, and then this year they had 6,000 people in an arena for Cody versus Kenny Omega. So at that time to have been the highest gate, one of the highest gates in ROH history, just says how far they have come. And how much they have proved themselves in the years following. And with that said, with that those facts out of the way, now we get to the main show. The show, if you tuned in on either DVD or on pay-per-view back then, started off with a BJ Whitmer promo. That promo was a promo basically introducing the newer fans, the newer people that are watching to Ring of Honor. Saying that it is no nonsense, and that they let the wrestlers do the talking, and that they let do the wrestling itself do the talking, and that it's not like the companies that they had been used to seeing at the time, such as the WWE and TNA, which were very angle heavy, were angle based and very heavy on very dramatic soap opera storylines, while this was more realistic. And then after that, he called out anybody in the ROH roster to come out and fight him. And who do you know? Who loves a fight more than? No, I'm not talking about JBL. I am talking about the legend, one of the most legendary wrestlers in Japanese wrestling history, and one of the most infamous as well, Takeshi Morishima, who was not just one of the most revered Japanese wrestlers at that time, and still is one of the most revered Japanese wrestlers. But he also, at that time, was the Ring of Honor World Champion. And, in my opinion, dare I say, one of the best ROH champions ever. And I know some people will disagree with me on that. And I know some people will say that other champions were the best champions ever, such as Nigel McGuinness, who came shortly after him, and such as Jay Lethal, who just had a run with the Ring of Honor World title a couple of years ago. Samoa Joe, who had the longest reign with the ROH world title. All those are very valid arguments, but Takeshi Morishima, I think, really had something going with that Ring of Honor world title run. His GHC title runs, if I remember correctly, did not last as long or have the oomph that this Ring of Honor world title run had. He held the ROH title for a year compared to the months that he held the GHC title. So with that out of the way, and with that said, we get into this match. This match, I remember this match being very, very short from my recollection from seeing it way back when, but I did not remember BJ Whitmer getting in as much offense as he did. And he didn't, and for a 5 minute, 6 minute match, he surely got in a lot of offense on Takeshi Morishima, which was pretty interesting. But Takeshi Morishima, in the end, as he should have, still looked like a menacing monster, a total badass in the ring, like he would later on in the show. And this match kind of just reminded me of like what made Ring of Honor so different than what you were seeing in WWE at the time. This was 2007. 2007 was very, you had a lot of really ridiculous, wacky angles in the WWE at the time, including the one that they had with Donald Trump at WrestleMania and that whole thing. So for this to be like an old school kind of like enhancement match, you would say, but not quite. Like somebody with like somebody with an established name going against your resident monster, and that resident monster taking him down. That's what this match was. Kind of a bit of a shorter match, but it wasn't necessarily an enhancement match, as it got kind of both of the guys over. BJ Whitmer had his fair share of offense, but he also had his fair share of really doing a lot of just, you know, making himself look like he was just being destroyed by Takeshi Morishima. And Takeshi Morishima did a good job of making himself look like the destroyer. You know, he constantly hitting these clotheslines, hitting these big boots, which looked devastating, and just ravaging him with this offense that seems so basic. Well, when you watch the match, it's actually kind of a revelation compared to what we see today. Because today you see all these really crazy, flashy moves that necessarily look flashy, but they don't have the impact that these boots and these clotheslines had. These clotheslines looked like they could kill a person. They looked really, really, really painful and looked like something you would never want to get hit with. And by the time he was done, he looked like he just destroyed that man's will, destroyed that man's soul with just the knuckles in his fist. And that's what made it such an interesting match and such a very high profile jobber match, in a sense. Not to say that term, because I don't like saying insider terms, but that's kind of what it was. It was basically, you know, showing what these two guys could do in the span of like a shorter match, while also getting your champion, who should be the one getting over in this match, over. After the match was when it got really, really interesting, however. Nigel McGuinness came out to a huge pop, and it kind of reminded me just how energetic the Ring of Honor crowds usually are at those shows. Like, you don't see that in the WWE. You don't see a WWE crowd being energetic on most television shows and on most pay-per-views these days. It's mainly a lot of them are sitting on their hands, but for this crowd in the Manhattan Center went nuts for Nigel McGuinness. And Nigel McGuinness came out and he was like, he told Takeshi Morishima, that was a great match, which in a sense it was. It was a really entertaining match. And he said, this was a great match, and you are a great wrestler, but then he went on and said that he should be the world champion and that he should be the guy challenging for the title, which he ended up doing twice later on that year on pay-per-view. Bryan Danielson comes out and gets an even bigger reaction from being away for five months. And he comes in, just delivers the most passionate promo, just this very just masterful promo where he just spout out everything from the deepest, darkest parts of his heart and just went at Nigel McGuinness and kind of just brought back, not only just brought back that rivalry that those two had been having in Ring of Honor at the time, but also started bringing back, hey, I'm the best wrestler in the world and I can just take on all these dudes. He named everybody that he beat and that he took out. He did take out Lance Storm, which is a great match from Better Than Our Best. I recommend that match. He did wrestle CM Punk. He He did take Samoa Joe out. He took a lot of those guys out, had great matches with Kenta. All those things that he said in that promo were true. And then Nigel went back and forth with him, and then there came a brawl. A brawl broke out between Takeshi Morishima, Brian Danielson, and Nigel McGuinness. Danielson and Nigel separated after they fought, and we didn't see them again until later on in the show. That kind of open, I think, is what we're missing in wrestling. And I think that was what was missing in wrestling even then. Because, like, I forgot to say this in the intro when I was going over the show. But when I was watching this when I was younger, I was kind of a bit turned. It was like a year removed from when it actually happened, though. I was kind of turned off from the WWE at that point. I didn't lose my faith in wrestling, but I kind of did because, like, not only did the Benoit stuff going on and in the media at the time kind of just really make me kind of want to give up on wrestling, but I also had the WWE kind of, like, you know, having the way they did their shows back then, it wasn't appealing to me as it was a couple years earlier, and I just kind of was about to give up on wrestling, and then I saw Ring of Honor, and this was one of the first shows that I saw, and I'm like, and from the open, I was like, dang, this is what we're missing in wrestling. And I figured, you know, that's the kind of thing that we're missing in wrestling even today. You know, I found myself saying the same thing when I was watching this yesterday to prepare for this, and not just go off on my memory. I saw this and I was just like, we need more of this. We need more of the shorter matches and more of the more jobber matches that you can do on not just television, but pay-per-views that we can build up for the bigger pay-per-views and the bigger matches. But you also, I think, really need passionate promos like that. Something that comes from the heart and doesn't sound forced, I think, is another thing that you need. And I think that's something that you saw there and you'll see many times throughout the night. And there's also something else that was missing in there. That brawl looked real. It wasn't something like you would see on 205 Live where they would start a brawl and then when they would do a wrestling move and then that just kind of takes away your suspension of disbelief of, oh, these dudes are really fighting each other. They didn't break out any wrestling moves in this brawl. It was literally them just going at it fist to fist, eye for an eye, just going at each other. And Takeshi Morishima just jumped in because he's always ready for a fight. It felt like something those characters would actually do in a setting like that where they're fighting. And you don't see that much in the WWE anymore. Even on the main roster, you see these brawls, and those brawls end up with, like, a move through, like, the announce table, or a move in the ring, or a move on the stage. It looks cool, but what are you gaining from that? I mean, nobody in their right mind, even the younger audience, is going there and saying, oh, they're actually fighting and actually having a real fight. Heck, they probably see even more real fights in their schools and whatever, and see more real fights on the streets and on YouTube and whatever else than they do in the ring in this current era. Those real fights are what really draws people to wrestling, because then you can get invested in a feud because these dudes are really fighting each other and clutching and punching, and it just made for a better pro wrestling experience, in my opinion. And I think that's just kind of where we're at with that. And another thing that was really evident in this thing was really kind of showing just how to really set up a really hot opener that gets the crowd even hotter for everything else. You don't see that. The crowd, usually WWE takes advantage these days of the hot crowd, but in the worst way. They're like, hey, there's a hot crowd. They'll probably always be hot throughout the entire night. Let's put a crappy match on in the beginning. And nothing really gets done from that. When you keep them hot throughout the night and you keep them getting more and more and more invested throughout the night, You can milk them for those really good reactions that you actually want. You can do that. But the way that, that's not being accomplished in WWE. In Ring of Honor, as you see with this show, that's what they did. They crafted this really great segment and this great match in the beginning to really just get the audience invested. And after that, pretty much, was, and then after that, you had a really, really, really good match. Probably, in my opinion, other than the main event, probably the best match on the card. And that's saying something considering who these two guys are. This next match was Naomichi Marufuji, who has for a long time been a really top tier guy in Pro Wrestling Noah, even back then, versus the guy who's currently right now in Roppongi 3K, Rocky Romero. And I know for a lot of the newer fans, that's a very shocking thing to see Rocky Romero in a singles environment, because for a lot of these newer fans, he's been always in these tag matches. But here he was a singles guy, and it was great. It was a great match. Like, throughout the match, they meticulously put a lot of these different sequences in the match to hype up the drama of the match and keep the match going and keep the crowd hot. And then the rest of the match was them doing grappling holds and then like, and doing some martial arts kicks, like whatever they could to make this seem like a real fight. And Marufuji and Romero really kind of brought that out, kind of really showed that they could do a really good match. Like, Marufuji, I'm not surprised, because I've seen him do some great matches, especially recently. You know, the match with Okada, the matches that he's had with Kento Miyahara in All Japan. You know, those matches are great. And I've seen those matches. And I've seen the matches he had with Kento way back when in Pro Wrestling Noah. You know, I've seen a lot of those. Rocky Romero, I've seen very few of as a singles guy, but every time I see him as a singles guy, no matter how often I see it, it never gets old to me, because I know he can actually do these really cool stuff, and it shows how criminally underrated he is in the ring. It really shows that he can have good matches and not just be this comedic character like he has been lately. Nothing wrong with comedic characters in wrestling. I think there's a place for them, and I think you can draw money as a comedic character, but when you've been a comedic character for so long, sometimes people forget who you were as a wrestler, the high caliber talent you were. And I think that's the thing with Rocky Romero, is everybody kind of forgets, hey, this dude was actually at one time a really good professional wrestler. And I think that's the issue, is that he was a really good wrestler. And then once he got over with this comedic character, everybody kind of forgot. Which is why I suggest everybody that's a hardcore fan of indie wrestling, really go back and either subscribe to Honor Club, ROH's streaming service, where you can see a lot of his early ROH matches, or I would say subscribe to High Spots Wrestling Network, where you can see some of his PWG stuff. Any one of those matches that he had on those cards were amazing, and he could really go in the ring. I've seen some really good matches where he can, like, just battle it out with the best of them and just keep going, just, you know. And sometimes he gets the win by the skin of his nail, and it's just like, it's a really kind of, like, trippy thing to see for me as a fan. And it's just, but in all the really good ways. And I think this is something that we saw in this match in particular. Because I'm not used to seeing him grapple and then go for holds and then make his arm bar look like he's ripping the guy's arm off. Because trust me, when he walked on that arm bar late into the match, I literally went, oh, he's ripping that dude's arm off. Even though I knew him, he really wasn't. That's kind of what I was seeing, was basically him just kind of ripping, kind of, you know, pulling and tearing right at the muscle of the arm, as he's pulling on the armbar and cranking it down, because he was really good here at making those submissions, as sparingly as he did them, he made them look very, very painful, and I think that added so much to the match. And it really kind of showed the people and people in the building that night, the people watching at home on pay-per-view a couple months later, the people that were watching on DVD a couple months later, just how good he actually is, and that people shouldn't overlook him as this wrestler that can go and have these high caliber matches. Like, if ROH didn't know he could have these high caliber matches, they wouldn't have put him in the ring with Narimichi Marufuji. But they did, and they knew what he could do in there, and boom, I think a lot of people kind of opened their eyes at that time to how good he was. These days, are a lot more different. Like, he's either a manager, or he's doing comedic tag matches or something. And that's just kind of a night and day difference. Although, I do think that if you were to have I, although I do think that if you were to have Rocky Romero do a singles thing, like if you were to put him in the PWG Battle of Los Angeles, or you put him in some other tournament, or you put him even in a singles environment, like have him break away from Roppongi 3K, or what they should have done when he broke away from Roppongi Vice. If you put him in that singles environment, he can have good matches. And I think he still has it. And I think if you were to give him that singles environment, he could really just go in there, go balls to the wall if he, on those rare occasions and show people, hey, this dude is no dude to laugh at and say, hey, he's just a comedic wrestler. No, that dude is a grade A wrestler, period. Not just Romero looked good here, but I think Marufuji looked really good here on the offensive and on the defensive. Because, like, he just showed a little bit. He showed just how good he is as a wrestler, but he showed it to the American audience. And I think that's something I think that's why a lot of the Western, Japanese wrestling fans that watch more than just New Japan kind of know it because they saw the stuff he was doing in ROH, and a lot of those fans were like, hey, we should probably watch where he comes from. And he comes from NOAH. So they're like, hey, let's watch this. And then they probably saw what he could do, and that's probably where he got a lot of his first exposure in there here in the States. So he really kind of took it to another level in this match and really kind of upped up his game more than just a usual tour match that he would have in like a B show on a NOAH show or something. Like, he really kind of showed, just how high caliber of an athlete he is, and that why he should be pushed to a high level by any company that he's in. Like, NOAH gave him the GHC heavyweight title later on, but not at this time, which I think was kind of a mistake, because, like, Marufuji was doing really good matches at this point, not just in ROH, but in NOAH, and I think he should have been GHC champion in a much shorter time than he was. I don't know when he was originally first the champion, but I know he was champion later on in 2015. So, like, if anybody knows that he had a run earlier before 2007, let me know. But I don't know too much about NOAH, so I that's kind of where I'm at with that. But I think as it stands right now, I think he really should have been given the GHC title as quickly as they could have while still keeping him over. Because then he could have really been established as a top guy from the get-go, and they could have had somebody to build their back on. Kind of like what Hiroshi Tanahashi has been for New Japan for so many years. Marufuji could have been that guy, or kind of like what Kento Miyahara is right now for All Japan. He really could have been that guy for NOAH, especially after the whole issue with the Yakuza and the whole thing with Misawa's passing. I think he really could have been that ace that they needed to really kind of rebuild themselves. And he really kind of showed that here. Like, he showed just what he could do. And it was a really good match. Like, there was a lot of really good submission sequences, a lot of sequence. There was one sequence where they were chopping each other back and forth, and every chop just sounded like a gunshot was going off. They just kind of just went at each other. Like, that crowd got all quiet when they started chopping, because, like, they knew they were seeing these two, like, chop each other like crazy, and they just kind of admired it and respected it. Like, you could hear a pen drop, which, hypothetically, a pen kind of did drop on each guy's chest, pretty much. Because you could hear, like, a sharp sound when those two just chopped each other, and it was great. And they had, like a series of kicks towards each other. They had, like, another sequence where they were reversing each other's kicks, and then there was one part of that sequence where Rocky Romero went for the kick, and then just, he barely missed his head. Like, you know, like, at first, before I rewinded it back, it looked like he grazed his head, but I rewinded it back, and he actually completely missed it, and it was like, dang. That takes some skill to make it look that close to somebody's head before they land the kick. To make it look like they went that close to somebody's head before they dodged the kick takes a lot of skill, and I think that's why both of these guys were very well versed in martial arts, and I think they really are. Even if it doesn't say it anywhere publicly, I think they really had some kind of training in martial arts. Which doesn't surprise me, considering that Rocky Romero trained at the New Japan Dojo. I'm not necessarily familiar with where Marufuji trained. I think he would have trained at, like, the New Japan Dojo or the dojo that Noah had for a while. But I don't necessarily know, but I think he kind of trained at either one of those two, kind of, that's where he picked up those martial arts training. And I especially think that's where Rocky Romero got it, because Inoki was very obsessed with MMA at the time that he brought in Romero. So for him to learn that, that's definitely where he learned that, because Inoki wanted all of his guys to learn MMA stuff, and, you know, Rocky Romero kind of picked that up and used it in his wrestling, and look, it kind of pays off to learn that, because then you can make your wrestling a lot more realistic and a lot more, you know, I'm gonna hurt you kind of thing, even though you're not hurting them, you know? It's a good way to learn how to pull your punches and fall back, you know? So that went pretty, I think that this match overall just did, it just really, really went well, and just showed that these two could do some good shit, you know, some good things, and just do something that is good, that is, you know, phenomenal, something that you can kind of sink your teeth into. And it kind of made for you know, something that could keep the fans going even hotter into the night. Because if you gave them kind of a stinker there, they probably would have died a little bit and would have been dead for the next match. And you didn't want that, especially on your first pay-per-view. And then Marufuji beat him and looked really strong here at the end. And overall, I think it did what was intended, or at least what I think was intended. They pushed the whole thing with Noah, and they pushed their partnership with Noah by having Marufuji win. But they also made Rocky Romero look incredibly good and showed to that hardcore ROH audience that this dude is a really good wrestler, and to the casual ROH audience that may have been watching on In Demand. And then the next part of the show, knowing what we know now and knowing what has happened since this show aired, it's kind of a bit depressing, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of a really cool thing to look at, especially knowing how good this was. It was a Larry Sweeney promo where he was there with Tank Toland, who at the time had like a fitness kind of gimmick, and he kind of just went, and Larry Sweeney kind of had a lot of passion in his voice when he did this promo, and I think that's why it's so depressing, because he had such a passion for the business, from what I've heard from so many people, and that he kind of really, really enjoyed wrestling, and I think that's what showed in this promo, was he was doing this segment, he kind of just, you could tell he was enjoying himself with what he was doing and what he was saying, and he was actually having fun, that everything was coming natural, which I think it's a thing that they could that a lot of promo artists today could learn from Larry Sweeney, because like he still looked like that nasty heel that wanted to just rip, wanted to have this monopoly of wrestlers, but he also looked like he was comfortable in that role, and I think that's what really made a difference in this promo. He kind of had a little, I don't mean to compare him to anybody, but he really had a little bit of Paul Heyman in his voice. Like, he really had a little bit of Paul Heyman in his voice, because he was just hammering out lines left and right, and just those, and at some points his voice was escalating, he was getting that fire in his voice, and he just kept going and going and going, and then he's like, and then by the time he did his whole reveal of who he was signing next, I bet everybody was kind of biting their fingers like that one SpongeBob episode going, hey, I this suspense is killing me, please tell me, please tell me, please tell me. And then by the time we told them, everybody was probably satisfied because it was Sara Del Rey, one of the best female wrestlers in the world at that time, and honestly somebody that's criminally underrated, and I hope that she actually has an in-ring appearance in WWE one of these days. So seeing her in that role was kind of really cool, and you know she kind of introduced herself to the audience that may have been watching that night, and then Take Tolan decided to bring in Bobby Dempsey and do a fat shaming thing, which considering that he had a fitness kind of Simon Dean esque gimmick, that's something that doesn't surprise me, but it's something that I don't think would work today. I don't think it would necessarily work today to do a fitness gimmick kind of like that, because then people would get offended, obviously. But back then, it worked pretty well and for a heel and got some good heat, and it did its job, because then it made him look like the stereotypical fitness dude that wants to berate you and just go, hey, you are absolutely pathetic, drop down and give me 20, sir, and that whole thing. And then Sara Del Rey decided to bring out the misogyny in Take Tolan by saying, hey, I challenge you to a squat off, and then that's what they did, and Take Tolan's like, hey, if you want a squat off, honey, that's what you got, that's what you get, basically kind of being very condescending, like, hey, a girl can't beat me in a squat off, and whatever. And they decided to do the squat off, and it was entertaining, but it's definitely something that you wouldn't do today. Obviously. So people may have a different opinion, like, hey, this wasn't entertaining, but it really kind of worked for me, because honestly, as a person, I kind of looked at that, and I'm like, man, I should really start working out. So I guess it just had a really perverse effect on me when it really shouldn't have, but whatever. The next thing on this show was a really surprising match. Like, I remember this match being decent, but I don't remember this match actually being as good as it ended up being. This match was the Briscoes versus Claudio Castagnoli and Matt Sydal for the ROH World Tag Team Championships. I found it, as I said before, to be a really good match. Which, and when I went into this match, when I was watching this yesterday, I was like, this match was good, but how good was it really? Because I was thinking that it wasn't as good as I thought it was, and I was prepared to be underwhelmed a little bit because it was so late in the card, and obviously you would need to give the people some kind of break. But man, it actually ended up being a really great match. Like, both teams played their roles excellently here. The Briscoes came in as a dominant tag team, which they still are today. The dominant tag team that's destroying everybody and leaving a path of bones in their wake while they're telling people to man up. And Matt Sydal and Claudio Castagnoli even though they were on the same level or maybe even on a higher level than the Briscoes when it comes to athletic ability, they came off as the underdogs here. Nobody believed actually that they could win, even though later on in the match they would basically kind of make the people believe and be like, yes, they're going to win this. They're going to win this. Yeah, somebody's going to take the titles off of the Briscoes. And then, you know, that obviously didn't happen. And I think that's a really good thing to have, is when you have that psychology where you have a clear team that's being dominant, and you have the other team that's being the underdog. It works so well in wrestling, and I think that's why it works so well here. And it mixed really well with some of the athletic things they were doing in this match. Like, they were really kind of just hammering each other down and just doing a lot of really athletic stuff and just kind of just pushing themselves to the brink on this show and just kind of going pedal to the metal and hitting. And Matt Sydal was at his most high-flyingest in this match, you know, doing a lot of high-flying stuff, especially jumping off the shoulder to Claudio and doing a knee drop to the outside. Claudio basically jumped from one side of the ring to the other, doing an uppercut, and he literally had no springboard on him whatsoever. It looked like he didn't even jump from the top rope. Like, he didn't jump from the top rope. He didn't do a springboard. He literally jumped from one corner to the other and leaped in the air and did an uppercut. And I'm like, dude, who are you, Superman? Like, is this why WWE calls you the Swiss Superman? It must be, because he just kind of just let them have it and just kind of just, you know, gave them a lot of really cool stuff. Like, this one thing that we see all the time in the WWE but looks so cool here was where he ran across the ring, jumped on the middle rope, which made him even more impressive than what he does in WWE where he jumps on the top rope. He literally jumps from the middle rope, spins in the air, hits Mark Briscoe with an uppercut, and man, it looks so crisp. And it looked great. And, you know, and there was a lot of really cool stuff in here that you would see, and then at the end, Jay Briscoe, you know, got him, got Sydal, went for the pin, 1, 2, 3, it was over. The Briscoes were still the tag team, the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. And it worked pretty well, and then what came after worked even better. Cause then we cut to Dave Prezak and his commentary partner, whose name escapes me right now. We're thanking the fans, and we're telling the fans where they were gonna be in ROH next, and that these tapings were going to be taped for future pay-per-views. Then came Kevin Steen. And you know, when Kevin Steen goes to grab a mic from somebody, you know something's about to be said that's definitely not PG. And this wasn't. You know, this was not definitely PG at all. The dude basically grabbed the mic, did his usual profanity-laced promo, and then he challenged. And then he, right when he was next to El Generico, challenged the Briscoes to a tag team title match. The Briscoes accepted, and then boom, Generico and Kevin Steen ran to the ring, just sped to the ring like they were the Roadrunner. The Briscoes ran at them, chomping at the bit like they were the coyote, wanted to eat at their flesh, and then they ran into the ring and they started brawling. And then security and everybody tried to separate them. The wrestlers came in trying to separate him, and Kevin Steen was not having any of that, so he just started clearing house. El Generico followed suit, kind of being the best friend that kind of tags along with what the other psychotic best friend does. And they just kind of, like, tossed everybody out, and then Kevin Steen grabbed one of the younger wrestlers, picked him up in a package pile driver position, and threw him against the middle turnbuckle, and it just looks so nasty. He just throws him back first against the middle turnbuckle and just lays waste to him. It looked gnarly. And then Kevin Steen did that to another person, and then he grabbed the last young wrestler, hit him with a package pile driver, and then El Generico jumped on everybody else, leading to Kevin Steen and El Generico jumping, running over, grabbing the Briscoes, and them all fighting in the back. Kevin Steen swinging a chair at Jay Briscoe's head. It was crazy. And it looked like something. I don't mean to compare, because this looked really, really like, it was kind of something new to my unseen eye back in 08. But it looked, now it looks to me like 1995 ECW. Like, a lot of those really crazy brawl segments you would see in like 95, 96 ECW, that's kind of what this was. And it really kind of added to this thing, and it just really, it was really fun. And, you know, and that's kind of where we, really where we were at with this show. You know, everything was really fun, but at the same time kind of intense. And it made it for a really pleasant show to watch. And then we go to Roderick Strong and Delirious. Now, the angle going into this match may not have been something that you would do in 2018, especially knowing what we know now about concussions and whatnot, and the whole thing about what concussions can do. And especially knowing that this pay-per-view may have taped in May, but it aired a month after the Benoit murder-suicides. Knowing that, this is totally something you would never do in 2018. Because of all the things we know about concussions and knowing what I just said, it's something that I think people would be very offended about, especially people in that medical field that study concussions, especially Chris Nowinski himself, who studied Chris Benoit's brain, would probably be very offended at a storyline like this. But it really added to the intensity of their feud and kind of gave, gave the name to this stable that he was having with Rocky Romero and Davey Richards. It really gave a name to Roderick Strong's stable. And, you know, once Dave Prazak said that Roderick Strong has no remorse, boom, the no remorse core was born. So that's a positive. And another positive was that it was just the intensity that this, the intense angle that this match needed to stand out. And it really did kind of stand out. Because they really kind of brought a lot of intensity to this match and just really went at each other. And you would, and as a kid, like as a young kid, I really thought they gave Delirious a concussion and just kind of went with it. And Roderick Strong just kept beating him up as a shoot. I don't know why I thought that as a kid. Because, you know, as a kid, I still thought I knew everything, even though I really didn't. So I guess that was just me being a smart. But basically, you know, that's kind of what I thought, so I was always going for Delirious. But here, when I was watching it last night, I'm like, I was focused on the storyline, and I was focusing on how intense this match was, and I was getting really into the storyline and whatever, and then at the end, I started believing it again, and I think that's just what a good storyline does. Even after so long, when you've known so much, it's, you know, a good storyline still brings you back into it. And I think that's just what this really did, was just kind of really get me into the match when I've already seen all these really crazy matches throughout the show. And it really made me invested. Delirious ended up not getting the win, which kind of frustrated me as a kid. And at the same time, it kind of doesn't make sense now a little bit. Like, I would think that if Roderick Strong took out Delirious, you know, and gave him a concussion, you would think that Delirious would probably get back his heat. Get his heat back and get Roderick Strong, but he really didn't here, and I think that still kind of puzzles me even now. But it was a really good match, so I kind of forgive it. And they kind of added on to the storyline afterwards when Roderick Strong and the No Remorse Corps beat up Delirious, and then they put a barricade in between the barricade and the apron, and then Roderick Strong power bombed him onto that loose barricade. That was really cool, and then they started furthering storylines that would play into what you would see a year later. Eric Stevens came out and scared off the No Remorse Corps, Which, the significance of that is that the No Remorse Corps, after they would disband, Roderick Strong would blame it on the Eric Stevens, and then boom, you would have this feud, which would end up in a fight without honor at Respect Is Earned 2, a whole year later. And I think that's just really, really good storytelling. Like, to kind of really bring up a storyline on the first Respect Is Earned on the first pay-per-view, and then do something on the next year for one of ROH's biggest shows the following year. Such good stuff. And it really kind of... And I know Eric Stevens did not really go too much go anywhere after this, but this was a really good storyline. I think this is the one thing I kind of remember him for, is this, and then the feud he had with Claudio over the American flag back in 2009. Like, those are the two things I mainly remember him for, and both of those were really, really good stuff, in my opinion. So, for him to be known as the guy who was in these two really good storylines, I think is really cool. And at least he's not known as the guy who had a really, really bad gimmick, like that one baseball dude in WWE, or Duke the Dumpster Drossy, or whatever. You know, at least he was known for actually doing something really good and really something you can sink your teeth into. So I really enjoyed it here. So that there's that. And then the next thing I think was a really, really, really good part of the show, and I think this is one thing I remember the most about this show, especially today. The Adam Pearce promo that was at the end of that was towards the end of the show here, and the main event was just after this. Basically, Adam Pearce came out and not came out, but he was in the backstage area. They had a camera on him, and he introduced who he was, and then he explained, hey, this is Ring of Honor's first night on pay-per-view, 56 million homes, and everybody in here is going deep down into their soul to try to figure out what they need to do to be the best. And that was a really good line. And while he was cutting a really fantastic promo, just kind of going right into it, somebody came into the hallway and said, hey, BJ Whitmer's over there. So then has the camera follow him. He goes to BJ Whitmer, talks straight into the camera and says, BJ Whitmer, and then after explaining the hardships that BJ Whitmer has gone through, and then he says, to add to this, BJ Whitmer is going to be forever known as the man who lost the first match on an ROH pay-per-view in an ROH world title match. Imagine how that man feels. And right there, I think everybody kind of related to him, even if they hadn't been in the business, because then, you know, like as a person, you don't really want to lose, and like, I remember being on, like, the amateur wrestling team when I was a kid, and I would lose, and I wouldn't feel too good after that for a while, for almost a week or something, you know, maybe even longer than that. And, like, nobody really wants to lose, especially their first time out on such a big stage, and I know wins and losses are not really as big as they are in actual sports in wrestling. Like, in professional wrestling, wins and losses are not as big as, per se, in other sports, but it still felt like in kayfabe it kind of felt like something that you would never want to feel in your life. You know, you're on this big stage, people screaming as you're delivering that promo, introducing people to the ROH audience. You're the first face that the ROH fans see, and then you lose. You know, They gave BJ Whitmer a character you can identify with as a babyface at that time. Of course, later on he would be a really better heel, but at this moment, you really felt bad for him, and I think that really made for a good babyface. And this promo really made for a really good promo, because you could hear the passion in Adam Pearce's voice. Like, you can hear just how good that man is as a promo, is when he was really good at kind of conveying that passion to somebody, even when he was being a heel or a face, it didn't matter. He was just good at conveying that. And that's something that Oh, this is a promo that like 90% of the WWE roster today could learn from. Like, they could learn how to be like more passionate in their promos and not be sound so robotic and forced, and sound more like they can just deliver a promo, just make everybody kind of empathize with the way the roster feels, with the way this one specific guy feels, with the way the electrical man feels, or, you know, anybody, how your pet fish feels, like, I don't know, anything in the world. Like, they can really just do something like that. And merely make the crowd invest in their promos instead of Roman Reigns saying, "Suffer and succotash, son." No, nobody wants to hear that. But what I do want to hear is more of these Adam Pearce promos. If anybody has a link to a really good Adam Pearce promo, let me know. Send it to me so I can listen to it. Because that dude was really gold on the mic here. I want to see more of him. And then the next match was the main event. Takeshi Morishima and Bryan Danielson. Yes, 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 yes. Versus Kenta and Nigel McGuinness. Now, this one was a really, really good match. That's just a really good match. I think it was probably the best match of the night. So perfect. Like, they had everything down to a T in this match. Like, everybody had their own individual character. You know, Bryan Danielson kind of was the stuck-up, "I'm the best wrestler in the world, and everybody still needs to know that" kind of thing. Still is the heel that everybody hates. Takeshi Morishima was the badass that everybody was trying to destroy, but they couldn't. He was instead destroying everybody else. Nigel McGuinness was kind of the dude who was the hot white meat babyface, who was just really kind of down on his luck, but at the same time was one of the best wrestlers in the world and really deserved this opportunity, even though he didn't necessarily get an ROH World title match. He was kind of frustrated because he wanted to get his hands on Bryan Danielson. He wanted to get his hands on Takeshi Morishima. Everything just worked out so perfectly. Kenta, you know, from that brawl, I forgot to mention, that brawl that they had earlier on was really good too, because then they had another brawl where Nigel called out Bryan Danielson and Takeshi. They both attacked Nigel McGuinness, and then Kenta came out, started delivering those really hard kicks that he's known for, and then scare them off, and boom, we have a tag match. It's a tag team match, player! Holla, 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 holla. And that's where we're at. So now we're back, now back to the match. The match began, you know, kind of started off a little bit slow, but then after a while kind of picked up. Everybody was fighting, everybody was just kind of going back and forth with the fisticuffs, just kind of just leveling everybody. And Nigel was kind of just, and then there was a part in the match where Nigel injured his arm, and then they taped up the arm while he was kind of selling it in pain. And then he came back into the ring and started going on into the match, trying to save Bryan Danielson and Takeshi Morishima, trying to save Kenta from Bryan Danielson and Takeshi Morishima, the onslaught that they were doing on Kenta. But he really, in the end, really honestly couldn't, because then at the end, he got taken out, and then Bryan Danielson and Kenta had a little bit of a skirmish, a really, really good skirmish, I might add, and then Bryan Danielson went for the count of mutilation. Kenta got out, and then he went for it again, and then he just wrenched on that arm so tightly and just kind of just pulled back like it was a lever. And then Nigel tried to save him. Takeshi Morishima got him in a vice grip so tight like a python and just kind of squeezed on his neck trying to keep him away while also trying to choke him out. And then Kenta got tapped out right then and there, and we had your winner. And then at the end, there was another brawl. Then Takeshi kind of just took out everybody, even his own partner, just destroying everybody in his path. And then he just started swinging the title like he was Seth Rollins. Everybody was throwing trash in the ring. Perfect. That's the best thing, the best way you can end an ROH pay-per-view. End it with a hot brawl, make everybody hate the monster, want him to get thrown out, want him to get overthrown by the new king! Even though that new king wouldn't come later until later on in the story arc. But damn it, they wanted it that night, but they would get it later on. So yeah, that was the pay-per-view. A really, really short show, compared to what you would see these days with New Japan and WWE. Kind of like New Japan would have like a 5-hour show. These kind of has like a 4 or 5 hour show these days. Raw has a 4 hour show on most pay-per-views, and they have like the 6 hour shows on the big four. They have the 3 hour Raws, the 2 hour SmackDowns. Like you see a lot of wrestling these days. If you were to watch this, you'd be like, damn, that was short. But at the same time, it was really good, so I don't care. I don't care how long or short a show is. If it's good, it's good. And this was really good. And I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed watching it for the third time in a row. Actually, the fourth time in a row now. But I really liked it. And I really liked reviewing it for you all. And I hope you all enjoy it. And to add to this, later on after I release this, there will be a poll for the next topics, and with those topics, I'll have a poll up, and whatever you guys decide, that will be the next topic we decide. That'll be the next topic we cover on this show, and that show will be next Saturday. So tune in, everybody. I'm Spazomatic. These were my thoughts, and I hope you use them for whatever you want to use them for. And I hope you download these thoughts, let them sink into your brain. Okay, bye, everybody, and hope you have a fantastic weekend. Dun dun dun.